Well, Thursday evening, and we welcome you to another edition of Sports Look here on CARE Radio. Sports Look, brought to you by our fabulous sponsors, Hamada Wealth Management, Gerber Electric, Taco John's, and Exchange Bank. Gus Counts with me, Tom Counts, and Gus, the upcoming sports schedule. It's kind of cool. We got tomorrow night, we're going to go down to Topeka, Kansas, down to the Hummer Sports Complex, and see the Atchison Phoenix and Highland Park. We don't get to see a lot of Topeka teams in the course of our schedule, so it's going to be kind of cool to go to a different facility, see a different club.
As far as like Topeka area teams, is, you know, we'll see a Rossville maybe in the playoffs, but that's about it.
Yeah, we'll talk about that game a little bit more. And then Saturday, the Benedictine Ravens back on the gridiron, and it's going to be another evening game. First game of the year, and now the third game of the year is going to be a night affair. It's a 6 o'clock kickoff, K-Radio pregame at about 5:30. Benedictine at Peru State. So we'll travel up to Nebraska for Raven football Saturday evening here on K-Radio. Well, all that said, well, last week, Kansas schools were able to get underway. Gosh, you and I saw quite a ball game. I mean, if you like a lot of offense, you don't mind seeing 70-plus points. You like 60, 70, 80-yard touchdown plays. But I'll tell you what, I mean, the Earhart Stadium was a place for you with Atchison and Lafayette last Friday.
Yeah, for a minute, I thought we were going to just light up the entire scoreboard, right? That thing got started quickly. You know, Atchison was able to turn Lafayette over on the opening kickoff and a couple plays later get into the end zone. And it was just a back-and-forth game, especially for the first half. Scoring slowed down a little bit in the second half, but Lafayette able to pull away from Atchison. You know, and for the Phoenix, I think it was a good first game in the sense of you started to figure out, you know, some of your offense, you start to figure out maybe some of your personnel things, and that's always one of those things that it is just a feeling out process. I mean, if you look across the state, there are a lot of teams that spent week one trying to just figure out personnel.
Yeah, and I think Atchison learned a lot about themselves, and Coach Smith, an experienced guy, he's going to have these fellows ready to go. And when we go down to Topeka Friday evening, we're going to see some familiar faces, and yet a team in the Scotties that I can't remember the last time we had one of their games on the air here on CARE.
I was just going to ask if you
maybe there was a home game. I do not believe that I have been down there. I've been there for basketball once, you know, 40 years
right.
ago, but for football, I don't think so.
It seems more like a basketball type opponent, right?
Yeah.
Like especially, you know, 20, 30 years ago.
Right, same division.
Right, and you were looking for some of those type of games and things like that, that you would have seen these teams match up. But, yeah, I can't remember the last time I've had an Atchison and, you know, really any Topeka team other than Hayden,
yeah.
right?
I mean, Hayden and basketball. And then not too long ago, we did do a Washburn Rural, I think, one time.
Okay, there you go.
But that said, other games, by the way, that went around last Friday night, Bishop Ward. Nice win for them over Sumner, 28-6. And Hogan Prep out of Missouri knocked off Wyandotte, 20-7. Other KCIL games canceled. Schlegel did not go to Lansing, and Harmon did not go to Washington. In the Northeast Kansas League, ACCHS starts the season at 1-0. The Tigers on the road, winning at Horton, 45-7. Marhill Mount Academy, a thriller up at Guy Galley Field. They get by Council Grove 22-14 to begin the year. Pleasant Ridge, talk about thrillers and games that came right down to the end. Pleasant Ridge ekes out a 24-22 win over Jeff North. And Jackson Heights, no trouble with Oskaloosa, 45-6 in week one.
Yeah, so Morehill Mount Academy, who was supposed to play McClouth last week, that game kind of fell apart. McClouth is also off this week and hoping to get things started here in a couple weeks.
Yes, so that all said, you know, maybe we should just take a look at the games going on this weekend around. As we mentioned, we'll be with Atchison as the Phoenix are at Highland Park. There's a game tonight, okay? If you're in a big, you know, if you're just in a hurry, you cannot wait for your Friday night high school football game. Well, you don't have to because Sumner is at Washington tonight. Schlegel is going to be hosting Pembroke Hill out of Missouri, and Ruskin will be at Wyandotte. Again, the Harmon and Schlegel game. Schlegel's still not playing, so that game is off the boards. In the Northeast Kansas League, Atchison County is going to be at home for the first time this year, hosting Pleasant Ridge and a pairing of a couple of 1-0 teams. Oskaloosa at Marhill Mount Academy, Ravens back-to-back home games to start the year. Jackson Heights goes to Horton, and if you like Saturday high school football, here's the thing. You can probably do this game and still make it to Peru State for the Benedictine game Saturday night because Valley Heights is at Jeff North on Saturday.
Yeah, and it's going to be an afternoon game, so, you know, and it's a short road you have to prove. Yeah, you probably could take in both of those games. There are a few games going on around the state of Kansas tonight. Miege at Blue Valley Northwest, that should be a great game. We talked about the Washington Sumner game, and Shawnee Mission Northwest will be at the Owls of Olathe West.
There you go. Hey, I know it's really early in the football season, but people love rankings, right? People love polls. And as you look around the state of Kansas, I'm looking at the Class 2-1A rankings, and there are some teams here that are always there, and they're good, and they're going to be good. How about this? Rossville, number one in 2-1A. They shut out Centralia, okay? Centralia, powerhouse, shut them out 38-0 in game one. Number two, you may have heard of this, Silver Lake. I don't know if you're familiar with anything with Silver Lake. They knocked off Rock Creek 34-28 in their first game. Number three is Nemaha Central. So they were able to, they are 0-1, okay? And they're still number three in the state because Nemaha Central lost on a last second field goal to Holton, who is, by the way, number five in 3A, last-second field goal, 25-24.
I'm sorry, but you don't think of Holton as kicking a field goal, right, to win a game.
Not very often. And so, anyhow, Nemaha Central, number three, but 0-1. Beloit, that got off a win over at Marysville, and they're 1-0. And number four in the state, Garden Plain, is 1-0.
Last week, Beloit was looking for a game and finally found Marysville. Right there at the very end. I understand why a lot of teams didn't answer the phone when Beloit comes calling, right?
Oh, no. Yeah, are you in a hurry to pick up that call?
Other teams that are just outside of the top 25 that were considered, Cimarron lost, Hillsborough at 1-0, Hoisington lost last week, Morehill Mount Academy, Osage City, TMP, and Wellsville all getting wins last Friday night.
Class 1A finds Olpe. Pick a sport. Pick a time of the year. You got to pick Opie probably to be at the top of the state. They defeated Ellenwood, skimmed by them 68-0 last week. So Opie is number one. Smith Center, who knows a little bit about winning football, they are number two at 1-0, followed by Inman, Sedgwick, and Plainville in Class 1A. Jumping to 3A, Andale. The Andale Indians knock off Rose Hill. They're 1-0 and number one. Wichita Collegiate, 1-0. Frontenac, Cheney, and as we mentioned, Holton, number five in Class 3A.
You look at Class 4A, right?
Yeah.
Let's see. Class 4A, the number one team in the state
is 0-1.
Yeah, Bishop Miege, right? They lost to Blue Valley North. This week, they're going to get Blue Valley Northwest, who's another really good 6A team, right? Listen to the teams that Miege will play. At Blue Valley North, at Blue Valley Northwest, home with St. Thomas Aquinas. Okay? Then in 2 weeks, they're going to make the trip just across state line, take on Rockhurst. Then they've got Blue Valley West, Blue Valley. Then on October 15th, they're going to go to St. Louis. They're going to take on Lutheran North,
which is one of the best teams in the nation.
And also, they tout probably the best player in the state of Missouri, and if not one of the best players in the country.
Pride?
Yeah, Toriano Pride Jr., the cornerback who is committed to Clemson, one of the top recruits in the country, and his dad played on North 2nd Street.
Yeah, well, 1020 North 2nd is where the school was at, but he actually played at Amelia Earhart Stadium.
And then Miege will finish the regular season with St. James Academy. I mean, that is just, that's a killer kind of a schedule.
Yeah. Well, and again, Bishop Miege, you talk about that schedule, you talk about, you know, the teams that they play. Again, number one in the state in Class 4A at 0-1. You've got to understand, Bishop Miege is 5-6 since the start of 2020. Five of those defeats have come against either a 5 or 6A team and or an out of state team.
Right.
Okay. The Stags are just that good. And if you seriously, you if you're a fellow 4A school or something, you want to like sign that contract?
No, and I mean, and that's why Miege is playing some of these 5A, 6As, or taking on some of the best teams in the state of Missouri. I mean, because Rockhurst is always a powerhouse over there.
Yeah.
Now, you know, but for Miege, you play those games, and then when you get to the playoffs, then it's kind of a little easier.
For sure. And then the number two team in the state of Kansas at Class 4A is also 0-1. So number one is 0-1. Number two is 0-1. Is St. James Academy lost last week to, oh yeah, number one in 5A, St. Thomas Aquinas.
Mm.
So
and look at Andover Central 1-0 last week. They edged out Newton 10-6. That's just a crazy game there. So, again, lots of great teams, and never too early to start looking at
ranking. No, we love to do it. We love to compare teams and look at things. I tell you what, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to compare and talk about some college football. The Benedictine Ravens, don't forget, in segment three, we got a Where Are They Now? Great, great, great interview. We'll be promoting that in the next segment. More Sports Talk right after this. Welcome back to Sports Look on Care Radio. We are really glad to have you along with us. Football season, volleyball season, cross-country season all underway. And for the Benedictine Ravens, Gus, they had their home opener last Saturday against one of the best teams in the country. Matter of fact, Grandview now number four in the nation. And Benedictine coming up short in the ballgame. Do not be deceived by that final score. This game was much, much, much closer than this. In fact, the Ravens trailed by a touchdown in the fourth quarter. They were driving in Grandview territory, missed a field goal, and which turned into a score, and then a late score made that final what it was. But for the Ravens, they were right there with this team.
Last year, after the second week of the season, when Benedictine went to Des Moines and lost to Grandview, pretty one-sided game, right? Like 44-6 or something to that
mm-hmm.
effect.
Yeah, yeah.
You walked away from that game and you said Grandview is probably one of the top two teams, top five teams for sure in the country. And you said, that's just not a team I want to see again this year, right? I walked away from Saturday and in the back of my mind, I said, if you make the playoffs, I really don't think I'm as worried about seeing this Grandview team as I was with last year's Grandview team, right? I think this Grandview team is beatable compared to last year's team, who I thought maybe underachieved by not getting to the national championship game.
Yeah, you know, I think that there's no question about that they missed a golden opportunity. And yet, I'm going to spin this a little bit because you know how I am. And in all these years, I've never thought there was a game that Benedictine wasn't going to win. I don't care if they'd have played the 72 Dolphins. I would have thought somehow they were going to win that game. But is this Benedictine team better? I mean, they played them much more closely. Granted, the venue is back at home this year, but I think that the Ravens continue to improve.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Ravens right now look like a team who, you know, they've got some athletes in some places. And again, for a team that's playing in their, let's just call it their second game under Coach Osborne, I think the players are still trying to figure out, you know, exactly how the offense runs. And the offense, I've always felt, is one of those things that it just takes a minute for it to all gel and come together. And especially when you've got players that are trying to figure out coach's vision. I mean, once they get on the same page, I mean, this is a pretty scary group.
Yeah, and add to that the benefit of some of them have been playing together for 4 or 5 years now. I mean, because of the extended eligibility after last year. So you got some guys who at least kind of know one another. Maybe don't fully know the system yet and are getting there, but they certainly know one another.
Can I tell you, if we see the production out of Jashawn Todd that we saw Saturday, right, the true freshman wide receiver for Benedictine, I mean, he was kind of a home run hitter, a big playmaker. I mean, if we can see the Ravens really expand his role in this offense, I don't see how anybody's, you know, going to beat him out for newcomer of the year in the conference.
It's going to be very hard to do that, don't you think? I mean,
yeah.
he was.
Yeah.
He showed you something.
He did. He definitely showed up in game one. So I think that's one of those things that the Ravens will probably look to expand his role a little more in the offense taking a look at games that happened in the conference last Saturday. We talked about Benedictine's loss to Grandview. Baker knocked off William Penn handily, 47-21. It was Missouri Valley over Clark, 44-20. Culver Stockton gets by Mid-America, 37-19. How about this? Great game. Central Methodist, a three-point winner over Peru State, 27-24 in Fayette. And, wow.
Wow.
Graceland, I'm telling you. Evangel knocks off Graceland 62-0 in that ballgame.
Incredible. I don't know just how all that happened.
Yeah, I mean, that's about where you leave it, right?
I am also a little surprised. Nathan Hamilton was now back-to-back Conference Special Teams Player of the Week, the Grandview kicker. He did okay. I didn't know that he did anything to be Player of the Week worthy.
But you got to understand, as a specialist, he scored, 8 points? He was 5 of 5 on PATs and a field goal?
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, I think that's probably good enough. And here's the other problem. When you're a voter on those things and they say, Nathan Hamilton, you're like, oh, yeah, I remember that name. Just write it in and
scratch
move on.
Scratch him down.
Like, just move on and figure it out.
The same thing you do with J.D. Woods. I know that name. Just scratch it down because he's probably the conference POI right now.
Yeah, I mean, he had another good game. I don't know. He didn't have as good of a game this week as he did last week. But, again, it's just easy to say J.D. Woods and move on down the road. So, right now, I think that, if you were putting your chips to the table, I think that J.D. Woods is right now your front runner for Conference Player of the Year, because just the other day, he broke the NAIA record for rushing.
Now, with that in mind,
he's like 42, right?
It feels like it, doesn't it? This Saturday, we're going to probably find out a little bit more about him and how well he plays, particularly on the road, is Baker and J.D. are going to go up to Des Moines, and they will have the first game of the day in the conference, a noon game. They're going to be Baker at Grandview.
Yeah.
That's the game, of course, that the eyes are on two top 10 teams.
Last year, the conference did right by both of these schools, right? I mean, by canceling those first two games, and they happened to be playing each other in one of the first couple games. So, anyway, Baker-Grandview did not have to meet each other last year. This year, they are going to play Grandview. It'll be the first game of the year up there, or first game of the day up in Des Moines. It should be a really interesting game. I think all the eyes in the conference are on it for multiple reasons. I mean, not only do you want to see who wins, you also want to get a better feel for how these two teams are. So, should be an interesting one. The conference day lays out kind of funny. You got a 12, you've got 2 1s, and what, 3 6s?
3 6s, yeah. 1 o'clock kickoff games will involve Central Methodist traveling over to Clark over in Dubuque, Iowa. That's another pretty long trip for the guys from Fayette.
I'm not even sure how you do that.
I don't know. You go over to take 70, or somehow you wind over to 65 there, Marshall, and then you go north to Chillicothe, and then west to 35.
Yeah,
and then,
it's just a disaster.
Yeah. You got Mid-America is going to travel over to William Penn as a 6 o'clock ball game. 1 o'clock game also, by the way, Missouri Valley at Graceland. As much as Valley has struggled, Graceland's not going to win this one either, because I don't think even Valley's that bad.
Okay, here's the better question.
Yeah,
ready?
Sure.
The best question, probably when talking about Graceland, do they win a game this year? Can they beat Clark? I mean, that's really what it comes down to.
No, they can't beat Clark.
Okay. So then you're saying Graceland can't win a game this year.
I'm looking up and down. I'm trying to see who they could beat here. Can't beat Clark. Can't beat Culver. I'll know more about Peru, but after Peru wins week one, can't beat Mid-America. They can't beat a game. They can't win a game.
Right.
There's just no one here. And it's terrible to put it in this terms. There's no one here bad enough that they can beat.
There you go.
Penn is going to be at home, 6 o'clock game, with Mid-America, kind of a ho-hummer, I think. You've got Evangel traveling to Canton, Evangel, Culver Stockton. Evangel, after having gone to Clark, now they go to Culver Stockton.
Yeah.
These guys have had some serious, serious bus hours. I can't believe they're still in this conference.
Yeah, I think that's one of those games, though, that maybe you look at. Like, this could be an interesting game, because Evangel's a team who I think is down a little bit this year, but if they want to prove to be a contender, they're going to have to beat Culver Stockton. And Culver Stockton's one of those teams who feels like they are right in the thick of things, because they held with Baker a couple weeks ago. And so it'll be interesting to see how that game plays out on Saturday evening over in Canton.
And then, of course, Benedictine and Peru State, 6 o'clock ball game. You're going to hear it here on K-Radio Live with the pregame about 5:30 from the Oak Bowl. And a night game in the Oak Bowl should be pretty cool up there, I would think.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be very daylight at 6 o'clock when we start, but it'll be getting pretty twilight by the conclusion of the contest. It'll be under lights at the end.
We talked about this a little earlier in the year that we've never been to the Oak Bowl for a night game, but we have done Peru State as a night game.
Absolutely.
That game was played in
Auburn, Nebraska.
Auburn. Mm-hmm. So, you know, which was one of the better games in recent memories,
and,
right?
And a great high school facility up there. So, anyway, Raven football coming up here on K-Radio Saturday evening. Invite you to join us for that. Invite you to stick around. We got a great interview coming up on Where Are They Now? Here comes Matt Fowler. We'll be back and talk to Matt right after this. We're joined by Matt Fowler, former Benedictine Raven football player. Matt, it is so good to talk to you. How's it going, man?
It's going great. It's going great. I appreciate the chance to talk to you.
Class of what, 01, right?
So graduated, 03 was actually the class I graduated with.
Okay. So we need to maybe just catch up, thumbnail sketch the last 20 years. How's it going for you?
I know, it feels like yesterday. I still talk to a lot of guys, and it's like, man, we can't believe we've been, you know, gone for 20 years, especially some of us, and it just kind of flies by. But, life has worked out very well for me. Had the opportunity to move on, started my own family, have three kids. My oldest is going to be a senior in high school this year.
Is he a football player?
A freshman. Say that again?
Does he play football?
So my oldest is a girl.
Okay.
But my middle is a freshman in high school, and he does play football. So I've been living vicariously through him a little bit, and he's got his first game. He's starting junior varsity right now, so I'm getting to kind of watch him and kind of still stay around football. So that's been good.
Well, we're talking to you and to a lot of guys from some of the various playoff teams because it's an anniversary season for a number of those, and that would include your 2001 run that this team was spectacular. And before we talk about the team and this, you know, the season as a whole, first of all, we got to talk about some of the guys. For me, it's always about the guys, and you had a classic group of I don't necessarily want to say characters, but certainly a bunch of guys who would leave a lasting impression on you, and I'm sure they have.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You know, one of my good friends even to this day is Guido Trinidad, who played linebacker. And we still get together. Even I live in Virginia now. He lives in Miami. And usually once or twice a year, he'll travel up here, or I'll travel down there. And I had the opportunity to actually live in South Florida for a while. And it's just those friendships. I mean, it's crazy that, you know, you're there in the moment and you don't realize these are going to be your lifelong friends. And, you know, with Coach Wilcox retiring and stuff, a lot of us had, you know, some conversations kind of about the good old days. And it's just, being at Benedictine was such an amazing experience. And being around Coach Wilcox was just some of the stuff he said and kind of taught and preached are things that I still kind of live by to this day. So it's just amazing the impact he had on not just us and the guys that were there at that time, but even before and after that time period. So it's pretty, pretty cool. But yeah, you're right. The guys is what kind of made it, and just the stories from back then and just the camaraderie and being around everybody. And, you know, I have so many just good stories of hanging out in the locker room and jacking around with each other. And even to this day, we'll just kind of laugh about the stupid stuff we were doing, but it was great.
You were there during the time of the Benedictine two-quarterback system, the alternating quarterback system. I mean, how was that? I mean, did that make a big difference? You, as a receiver, did you, like, say, man, I want to see Miles out there, or maybe, you know, that's not who I want in this situation? I mean, how did that work for you? How'd that feel?
Man, you're giving me goosebumps saying all these names, and I'm kind of going back to that time period. But, you know, it was weird when they came in because we didn't know how it was going to play out with two just unbelievably talented quarterbacks. And they made it work. And that was what was so cool about that team is, you know, they would split time, but they still would both come in the game and just be amazing. And really, as a receiver, I didn't see a difference. It was just the ball was coming no matter who was at quarterback. And they both had, you know, their certain skill sets that the coaches kind of figured out, you know, time and place and where they were going to put him in the game. And it just gelled. I mean, it's weird because you don't see that a lot with a two quarterback system. It is not very popular. And for us to kind of make it work was just a testament to them and the coaching staff and just kind of that team we had.
The offense was so fun to watch. I mean, the defense was spectacular, but the offensive guys, last week at halftime, we got to talk to Brad Hubbard, who was just nails out there. And you had the great offensive line with, you know, with Skaggs and Azell and Kellner and some of those big, big guys. I mean, that offense was formidable.
Yeah, man, you are pulling out the names now. Yeah, it was fun. I mean, we were so confident in games that we could just score points and do what we had to do. And you know, the saying they used to say, well, you know, defense wins championships. And we used to kind of joke on the offensive side of the ball and say it was really us that was taking care of business. But, yeah, it was fun. And I think during that time was when we ran the no-huddle offense. And, I mean, it was a lot going on with the option and the other stuff. And, you know, Craig Johnson was the other receiver that was out there most of the time. And Matt Nierman, and I think he was a freshman in 01, if I remember correctly. But, yeah, the line was huge. And we had Tom Bear, the, you know, probably the biggest tight end in the league at that time. But it was fun. Those were the glory days for me. And it's hard to believe it's been, you know, 20 years.
So you were there from, then was it 2000 to 2003?
So, yeah, my first season was 99, then last season was 02, so kind of okay. That.
So those, you were in the postseason. You were in the postseason almost every year.
Three out of the four, yeah.
And incredible games. I mean, but when people come back and they talk about Raven teams, and there have been so many great playoff teams, so many great playoff games, but you know where I'm going here. They all come back a play. There is one play in the history of Benedictine football that is just never going to go away. And the guy who caught that ball, I know who caught that ball, but I don't think he was supposed to catch that ball. Is there anything to this? Tell me the story of the Hail Mary pass.
Man, so this for me is yesterday. I mean, this thing, gosh, what a great day for me. That was my 21st birthday. You know, it was our home playoff game. We hadn't won a playoff game in however many years it had been. And so the way, and I remember this like yesterday, the way it was drawn up was I was supposed to run down the field, and it was supposed to be a tip play where I was supposed to try to out jump everybody and tip the ball to Craig Johnson. The way it played out, though, is complete opposite, right? So I got jammed at the line. Craig, unbelievable decision on his behalf to just try to make it to the corner of the end zone, because all Miles said was, I'm throwing it to the corner of the end zone as far as I can. And Craig made it down there before me. I was jammed at the line. And all I remember is just running down the field as hard as I could. And the timer had already gone off, the buzzer that you hear. I mean, I've watched the video thousands of times, to be honest with you. And all I remember is that ball somehow gets tipped and it's coming down right in the corner of the end zone. And I just dove, arms outstretched, caught it. And then that was the game. So, such a right place, right time for me. It didn't play out like we drew it up, but it played out, you know, obviously in our favor, and we won the game.
And remarkably, I mean, and maybe to set the stage just a little bit for this, for that one fan out there who may not be familiar with this play, we were playing Northwest Oklahoma State out of Alma, Oklahoma, had led for the big part of the game. Northwest had come back and scored, like with a minute to go in the game, and Benedictine now finds themselves down 4 points, and the clock has run down. The ball is around the 50-yard line-ish, you know, 45, and there's a couple of seconds left. There is one play left in the game, in the season for somebody.
Yeah.
And then you have Craig Johnson,
really,
who compared to a Matt Fowler, who is a tall young man, Craig Johnson is certainly not that.
No.
He's not the big guy down there, and yet he gets the tip.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, it was incredible just because the way we drew it up. And, I mean, it was, you know, the team, everybody's holding hands and, you know, anything we could get at that point. I think it was 2.9 seconds, if I remember correctly, left on the clock. And it was just a bomb of a throw, too. I mean, Miles threw that thing so high up in the air, and it gave us time to run down there. And, yeah, Craig was, you know, he would say he's 5'9". I'm guessing he's a lot shorter than that. And, I, you know, I was more of one of the taller guys. So that's what the plan was. Tall guy run down, tip it, to him, but roles got reversed and it all worked out.
And, you know, we like to think that football shares with us and teaches us life lessons. If there's a life lesson to be gained from that play in particular, it would be never, ever give up.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that was, you know, it was one of those things I remember in the huddle when everybody was still thinking we were going to win that game, and which is just amazing with less than 3 seconds left that we're all in the huddle and we're talking about how we're about to win this game and just having that feeling. And, man, I mean, Coach Wilcox is amazing. I mean, he just stayed calm till the end, and you knew he's always going to have some sort of plan to do something. And, yeah, you're right. There's still a lot of stuff to this day I take from football that, you know, transitions over into real life and, you know, things that you're able to pass on to your own children. And it kind of all starts with football and the little lessons you make. And, you know, Wilcox did a great job of doing that when we were there. It was, just such an unforgettable experience.
Winning that game then against Northwest Oklahoma State propelled you to the next round of the playoffs and an opportunity to maybe get back one from an Evangel team that had given you like your only loss all season long. We go to Springfield on what may have been the windiest night that I have ever seen a football game played on, and led Coach Wilcox to make one of the most remarkable sets of decisions by kicking the ball in both halves.
Yeah, you're right. You're bringing back some memories now, because I remember being as a receiver, horrible weather for me, because I knew we're probably not going to throw the ball very much in this game. And I think it was cold and maybe even a little wet, and they had a turf field. But, yeah, that was our revenge game, because they were our only loss in the regular season up to that point. And, you know, we were able to travel all the way down to Springfield and then come away with a win, which was pretty cool, which propelled us then, of course, into the Final Four, which was, you know, even more remarkable.
And the thought that I remember from that Evangel game was every point scored by both teams was all scored to what I'm going to call the West goal with the wind behind them. Neither team scored into the wind that day. And by kicking both times, Benedictine was able to have the ball in both the second and fourth quarters and use that to come to the thrilling win on the road down there.
Yeah, see, I go back to my earlier statement, right? Coach Wilcox always had a plan. And it seemed like he just knew, you know, it's almost like he had a crystal ball and he could kind of figure out where the game was going to be and what we would need. But, yeah, you're right. I think everything was scored in that one end zone and nobody even made it down to the other side.
With today's social media and things, it makes it easier. And you indicated early on in our conversation, as we're talking to Matt Fowler, former Raven football players, that, you're still able to keep in touch with some of your old teammates and perhaps at some point you'll be able to get to town and get together with some of these guys.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think the last time I've actually been back there was 2009, before I moved from the area. And, you know, but just staying in touch with guys has been great over the years and, you know, rehashing some of the stories and stuff. And, you know, it's good stuff. And then just, of course, following Benedictine football. I mean, I've been, you know, now you can watch the games on the computer or your phone or whatnot. And even a couple years ago when they made it to the national championship game, I remember we were actually moving up from South Florida to Virginia. And, I remember watching it on my phone, with my son as we're traveling up. And, so that was kind of a cool experience that, you know, I guess technology has allowed, us to kind of stay in contact more and stay up to date with what's going on with Raven football. So it's awesome.
As a guy who's gone through the Benedictine experience in both academically and athletically and has moved on to a successful career, if you were talking to some of these young Ravens today, you're out of school now 20 years, what would you tell them? Is there any advice, suggestions? I mean, what would you impart to one of these young guys?
Yeah, I would say, it seemed like a lot of people when they go away to school or when they got to Benedictine, it's that first semester. And once you get past that point of, hey, I'm not homesick anymore and I'm, feeling involved and just stay the course. I mean, just the time I spent at Benedictine was just, it was amazing. I mean, just the family there, the tradition, and then, of course, being a part of the football team, it was, it's a lifetime experience just to be a part of that. And just the friendships you make and the lessons you learn, it's a special place. It really is. And I remember showing up there my freshman year and just kind of having those questions if, this was going to work out for me. And I'm so glad I stayed and was a part of stuff that was bigger than me at the time. And just the opportunities that, having a degree from there and being to move on and do things in life. And, it all points back to Atchison, Kansas. And, it's a small place that most people haven't heard about once you move away from the area, but, it's one of those things that is kind of a magical and special place. And I would say, enjoy it while you can, be a part of stuff, meet people, take the opportunity to stay in the football program because, you'll regret it later if you don't. And I'm so glad, and I tell people that all the time, that I had that experience and was able to be there for 4 years.
Matt Fowler, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. I really appreciate you taking time out of what I know is a very hectic schedule. Thank you so much. It's been very enjoyable, and we look forward to seeing you maybe up here in Atchison sometime.
No, thank you for having me. It's good to hear a familiar voice from the playing days. So thank you again.
Hey, we're back with Sports Look on KIR Radio. Hope you enjoyed our convo with Matt Fowler. Great, great guy, and some great, great insights right there. Gosh, Gus, Kansas City Royals, they're out of the playoffs. Lost a heartbreaking game last night that they had put together a bit of a lead and then lost at the end of Baltimore 9-8. But a lot of people, and I mean, if you're a real baseball person, and I don't care what team you follow, whether you follow the Cardinals, whether you follow the Marlins, I don't care who it is, you're watching the Kansas City Royals right now because you're seeing if there will be Major League Baseball history written this year.
Yes. I mean, you've got a player putting together a special year, right? How about that? Salvador Perez, what, up to 42 home runs on the year?
Yeah.
And he's a bit away from...
You got, what, 23 games left? He needs 8 to get to 50.
He needs 8 to get to 50. He needs 6 to tie Jorge Soler. And I laugh because Steve Balboni held the record for the Royals on home runs for 30 years,
oh,
I
more
think.
Than that from, yeah, more
yeah,
than that.
You know, and it's been broke 1, 2, now 3 times, right? Moose broke it, then Jorge passed Moose, and now, if you're a Royals fan, like, this sounds terrible, you're really pulling for Salvi, who's probably the face of the franchise, you know, at least, you know, since,
probably.
You
yeah,
know,
you're right.
The 2000s on. You would love to see him be the home run record holder right now. At this point, probably the second best hitter in Royals history.
Yeah, that's, I think that may
I
be
mean,
fair.
There's an argument maybe to be made. And how smart did Dayton Moore look by signing Salvi up and pretty much finishing out his career as a Royal last year before this season? Because could you imagine a Gold Glove catcher, maybe a Platinum Glove catcher, 50 home runs, hitting the free agent market?
Could afford him.
I mean, every team would break the bank for him. I mean,
who could afford him?
You know, and the other day during one of the press conferences, you heard even Patrick Mahomes talking about how, like, you know, he understands that Salvi's probably not going to win the MVP because of Ohtani, but, like, more people
need to
be.
How bad luck is that that you're having this year when he's having his year?
Right, you know, but he was saying that more people need to be talking about Salvador and how crazy of a season he really is having. I mean, you go back to the home run derby where he hit the second most home runs in the first round and lost to the guy who hit the most, And they hardly talked about him during the Derby, right? You know, it's just one of those things that
now,
and he's putting together a spectacular season.
I'm looking for your thoughts. I don't think there's a right or wrong answer, but how much did it help Salvador Perez in 2021 to have a year off?
Yeah. So, I mean, you go back
to
that year.
A big deal?
Yeah, you go back to that year of 19 where he was out with the Tommy John for the whole year. Then you come to 2020, and they don't start till July, and you only play a handful of games. And of those, what, they played 60 games last year, and he probably only caught in maybe half.
Yeah.
You know, so basically, you played a hard month last year is all.
Uh-huh.
I mean, so basically,
in 2 years you played
2 years off,
yeah.
I mean, of baseball. And so I really think that's helped to recharge him, especially as much as he loves to play behind the dish.
I was going
to
say, and especially for the position of catcher where, you know, the wear and tear on the body is just immense.
Yeah, and, you know, I think Salvador is probably one of those players that's tough because he likes to be out there. He wants to be out there every day. So, I mean, I think it's kind of tough to rein him back and say, hey, let's not catch every day, okay?
Well, with that said, people have been waiting every day for, I don't know how many hundred days now for this NFL season to go.
I'm going to run out the door any second now and, like, jump on the couch, right?
Here's the thing. Week one is here, NFL season, and, of course, everybody wants to know about the Kansas City Chiefs. What a great rematch this is going to be. I mean, they scheduled this nicely. A couple of young, quality quarterbacks, a rematch of a postseason game from last year. But, you know, and who knows? Anything can happen. But the Chiefs are really good in game one, and Cleveland's not.
Yeah, Cleveland, I think, has put together some pieces, and I think basically they're gearing their team to try to beat Kansas City. But at the end of the day, Patrick Mahomes has a pretty decent record in September. Andy Reid is pretty good when he's had 6 months to prepare for one team. I mean, I'm going to be stunned if Kansas City doesn't come out and throw a number up. I mean, I heard a national guy today talking about, like, Cleveland's going to run the ball. Who cares? Patrick's going to score in two plays. Like, you know, this game could turn into a boat race if you don't watch it. But it should be kind of fun. You're going to see a revamped Kansas City offensive line. You're going to see Patrick probably doing crazy Patrick things. And you know what I kind of laughed about yesterday? I was listening to Clyde Edwards-Alaire. And he was talking about how he's kind of got butterflies because this will be his first game in front of a full Arrowhead Stadium. He said, you know, I played in Death Valley. He said, and that's crazy. He said, but the only time he's been at Arrowhead where it's been pretty full, he went to the Garth Brooks concert a few weeks ago. And he said, he's like, I had goosebumps. And then whoever he was with said, yeah, but when you guys are on the field, it's a completely different atmosphere. So I think that's kind of crazy to remember that a lot of these second-year guys haven't played in this kind of a crowd. So should be crazy, and for Chiefs fans to fill up Arrowhead for the first time since winning the Super Bowl 2 years ago.
And, you know, Kansas City hoping to have people like Tyrann Mathieu back available. They've got a couple of three other guys who are dinged up, but I'd say the likelihood of them coming out and playing, I mean, you'd have to be hurt pretty badly,
yeah.
I would think, to not want to be suited up and out on the field for this contest. Yeah. Other games going on. Week one. Oh, by the way, that Chiefs game at home, Arrowhead, 3:25 Sunday afternoon. The Chiefs are a 6-point favorite in that one. And
54.5 on the over-under. I'm taking the over.
You can take the over on that.
I mean, because I think the Browns will score a few. I think Kansas City probably gets into the 40s in this game, right? I think it would be tough to keep Kansas City out of the 40s all season.
Well, Cowboys are going to be at Tampa, and they're also expecting a lot of points, 52 here, 51.5. But Cowboys at Tampa. Tampa, the big favorite.
Yeah, I'm excited for this game, but can, like, it end in a tie?
Who is the quarterback for the Cowboys today?
They say Dak. We'll
know?
See.
Does anybody know? So anyway, Cowboys at Tampa, that's going to be a night game.
If you're looking to kill time before the Chiefs game on Sunday and you're trying to find a game that's going to be worth anything, uh-huh. The Steelers-Bills game at noon should be a real good game. You're going to get a feel for how good Buffalo is going to be coming off of that loss to Kansas City where they got thumped in the AFC Championship game. Buffalo, a 6.5-point favorite in that one.
Bears are at the Rams also, and Ravens at Raiders. I'm only interested in this because I'm going to see if they're – will the Raiders ever turn the corner? This is a Monday night game.
Yeah, but it's going to be at Allegiant, and it'll be kind of cool to see, you know, how many fans show up in Vegas and things like that. The disappointing thing for me, first Monday night game of the year usually is a doubleheader, and this year they got away from the doubleheader and just did one game. So That's a little unfortunate.
Saturday's NCAA schedule includes a team, Gus, who's looking to go back-to-back for the first time since I can't even think of when KU won two games in a season, let alone two in a row.
Friday.
And it's going to be tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Kansas at Coastal Carolina. Now, you think Coastal Carolina, they can't be very good. Well, yeah, they are. They're nationally ranked. They're number 17 in the country. Yeah. They are a very legitimately very strong team.
Yeah, the Chanticleers are really good. 6:30 Friday night. Chanticleers by 25, and I think they'll be fine.
They could cover that. K-State's going to be at home Saturday evening at 6 o'clock. They've got Southern Illinois.
Yeah, Southern Illinois, an FCS team. This game could get ugly, too.
Yes. Big game that more people should be looking at is the Hawkeye State, where it'll be the Hawkeyes and the Cyclones, Iowa, at Iowa State, number 9 and number 10 in the country. Should be a huge game.
Yeah, when was the last time that these two teams played and Iowa State was higher ranked?
Never. You know? I don't think they've ever played when they're both, like, in the top 10. That's maybe not when they were both nationally ranked.
Ridiculous.
This should be huge.
And the Iowa State running back, Bryce Hall, a Wichita product, and a Heisman hopeful this year. So,
Oregon is going to be at number 3 Ohio State Saturday morning.
Gross.
And the night game, Arkansas at Texas.
You know, Jerry Jones is probably paying attention to that game. You know, he'll get his out of the way tonight, and he'll be focused on that thing Saturday.
You know what we're focused on? High school football on Cat Radio Friday night with the Atchison Phoenix at Highland Park. You'll hear Gus Nyack coming to you from Hummer Sports Complex, 7 o'clock Friday evening, Saturday, Benedictine, a night game. In Nebraska, Ravens at Purdue, 5:30 pregame, 6 o'clock for the kickoff. I want to thank Matt Fowler. He was our interview guest. Great interview. Thank you very much, Matt. Till we greet you next time here on Sports Look. For our Sport Look sponsors, Hamada Wealth Management, Gerber Electric, Taco John's, and Exchange Bank. For Gus Couts, Tom Couts. So long, everybody.